Welcome back, 1144, 1260 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And on this Thursday morning, I want to check in with Stephen Dynan, Washington Times political editor. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
Congress twice rejected release of Taliban from Gitmo in trade for Bergdahl. They tried twice and they failed, so they figured a way to sidestep Congress?
Yeah, the headline is, I wish they hadn't said twice, as you know, your listeners probably know, we don't write the headlines exactly. It was more an ongoing thing. It was, the administration first raised this in 2011, continued on through early 2012. It came up in the context of a broader deal the administration was seeking to, basically they were trying to get the Taliban into peace talks. You may remember back then, Obama really wanted to, well, first of all, bring war in Afghanistan to an end, but in particular to make overtures that he thought could get the Taliban in to talk with Afghanistan leaders and with the U.S. And there are all these discussions about, you know, I mean, not literally the size of the table, but that sort of stuff about how do we even begin this process. One of the things that the U.S. was, that the Obama administration was considering as what it called a, quote, confidence-building measure was this sort of swap, a prisoner swap. Additionally, they were also, though, at the time, basically, it wasn't just a prisoner swap. The Taliban would also have had to have renounced violence and agreed to actually join in peace talks and whatnot. So this was all part of a big deal. But what's important to know is at the time, when they raised the issue of the prisoner swap, and more in particular, not so much the swap as much as the release of five senior Taliban fighters, that got heavy pushback from Congress. The administration did a couple of overtures on this in late 2011, early 2012, and then they were getting nowhere with the Taliban, which didn't actually want to renounce violence, and so basically those discussions disappeared. We heard a couple of blips about this. It would pop up in news stories occasionally, though there was no further notification to Congress or a consultation with Congress. It would pop up in news stories, and each time it did, reporters would ask at the State Department or at the White House, hey, what's going on here? And each time they were told publicly from the podiums of those both of those places, we will go back to Congress before we make any decisions and we will comply with the law. And, you know, here we are a year and a half after, 2 years afterwards, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, and the administration used the excuse saying the window of opportunity was closing. Was that about the health of Bergdahl? Because it appears that may be somewhat bogus based on what we can see in the video released by the Taliban.
Yeah, now, and there are a lot of questions about this. It looks like, so there was a, there are a couple of different videos floating out there, and obviously the new one is the one released by the Taliban that's what we've all seen. Lawmakers who got a secret briefing late yesterday, they were shown what's called the proof of life video. This was something that the U.S. demanded from the Taliban in order basically to prove, that the sergeant was still alive and worthy of continuing these talks. The lawmakers walked out of their secret briefing saying he looked really bad there. You know, obviously we Rowan Scarborough had the story for us yesterday that there was some speculation that basically his condition had been doctored in that video, that he'd been made to look a lot rougher than he was. And, you know, we'll see eventually when we get our first look at him sort of how he's doing. But yeah, no, all sorts of questions about that, and that'll be one of the things that the administration will have to deal with. But yeah, they are saying that they had a closing window of opportunity and that they felt they had to act. In particular, a couple of other things they said, and this is from the Director of National Intelligence, he said that given that we're drawing down troops over there, they believe that we simply might not have the actual military personnel to pursue another retrieval operation later if that were to be the case. So, you know, there was both a military window of opportunity closing and then a health situation.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you mentioned the closed-door meetings yesterday afternoon. Anything else leak out of that?
Yeah, a couple of things. Actually, there are two closed-door meetings with the administration briefing members of the Senate yesterday. In the early morning, and I guess this happened to probably both of them, but we know more a little bit out of the early morning meeting where several senators specifically asked about the likelihood or risk of these five Taliban returning to the battlefield. And, one of the senators told us, that they wouldn't describe it. I think it was Lindsey Graham actually asked on a 1 to 10 scale. He wouldn't tell us what the number was that he got back from the administration official, but he said the answer was not good. And I think I saw the Associated Press reported that that officials in one of these briefings said that 4 out of the 5, military officials expect that 4 out of the 5 Taliban are likely to return to the battlefield. So yeah, those are not good numbers. And we've seen a number of other folks, they won't necessarily go that far on specifics, but nobody, absolutely nobody up here on Capitol Hill is convinced that these guys are going to stay put and basically, raise bees and flowers for the rest of their life.
You know, this just drives me to the question, if the president is responsible for the safety of American citizens, how in the world could you make a decision like this?
Well, so, you know, his defense, I guess you have to take him at his word. His defense is, we don't leave people behind, no matter what. I mean, it literally is one American Army sergeant's life is worth 5 Taliban fighters, no matter what the consequences. And what we're still going to have to see is what other options were available to him and what other options were still on the table. If there were no other options, that would certainly make his decision, it would put it in one light. If there were other options, though, then he'll even have to balance, releasing 5 Taliban soldiers. I think Senator Angus King, an independent senator from Maine who sides with Democrats, made me put it best. A year from now, if the story checks out that Bergdahl really was in danger and the Qatar actually does its job in keeping the Taliban fighters monitored, Obama could look like a genius. But, if we're talking those guys get back on the battlefield, it really doesn't matter how Sergeant Bergdahl's health turns out. It'll look like an awful decision.
Yeah. All right. And by the way, did the administration at any point deny that Bergdahl has deserted his platoon?
They didn't deny it. What they've, I guess I would put it this way: he was never listed as a deserter. He was always listed as a duty status unknown. I believe there's an actual specific term for it that I don't remember off the top of my head. But they never listed him as deserter. He also, as far as I know, was never listed as prisoner of war, and that's now what we're terming him, of course, in this swap. The administration, who used to call the detainees at Guantanamo Bay enemy combatants or detainees, are now calling them prisoners of war. And this is, the president's taken a lot of criticism for a lot of different things. I guess let me just sort of add one more, which is that there are times the president seems to change the definition of this war from an old-style war where you do a prisoner exchange at the end to a new-style war. The war definition changes depending on what circumstances he needs to fit. And,
yeah.
We should all be a little worried about that, given that he's the one making those decisions unilaterally, as we saw in this case, without the input of Congress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. One of the other things. Chuck Schumer failed a history test yesterday. Is that what I understand?
Yeah. So there was this hearing. I guess it was Tuesday hearing where they were talking about the constitutional amendment to rewrite the First Amendment protections on free speech and campaign finance spending. Schumer at the end of his remarks said. And he's defending this change. He's defending adding a new amendment that would change the First Amendment. And he said Thomas Jefferson, the author of the Bill of Rights, would approve of that. Of course, Thomas Jefferson was not only not involved in the Bill of Rights, he wasn't involved in drafting the Constitution. He was over in France as the U.S. minister to France at the time. It was actually several fellow Virginians, George Mason, who was sort of the moral and intellectual force calling for a Bill of Rights. In fact, George Mason wouldn't sign the Declaration of the Constitution, specifically because he thought it didn't do enough to it didn't lay out a Bill of Rights and didn't protect those. And then James Madison, who actually he was, of course, the chief, we call him the father of the Constitution as the chief author of that. He didn't believe it needed a Bill of Rights, but he ran for Congress from the 5th District of Virginia. He ran for Congress. His voters basically said, look, we really think you need a Bill of Rights. So he made a promise to his voters that he would fight for a Bill of Rights, got elected, went to Congress, and actually pushed this all the way through. It's a really, really fascinating story, but we owe it all to James Madison.
Yeah, and we don't owe it to Chuck Schumer. So.
That's correct.
All right, anything going on for the rest of the week?
Well, we will have this afternoon. We'll have an intelligence hearing. Dianne Feinstein, chairwoman of the Intelligence Committee, is holding a hearing on the FISA reform bill. This is the bill that came out of the House, I guess, a couple of weeks ago that would change the snooping laws, the FISA's, NSA's ability to do bulk collection and whatnot. This is really important because that bill got watered down by the administration late in the process over in the House. Feinstein actually supports the watered-down version, but a number of other senators say there's no way this goes way, you know, we need to go much further in protecting our rights and protecting privacy. So it's going to be a pretty interesting hearing, and where that goes, basically Harry Reid's going to have to eventually decide whether he sides with Dianne Feinstein, chairman of the Intelligence Committee, or whether he sides with Patrick Leahy, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who absolutely wants the privacy protection. So a good fight coming up there.
All right, very good. Stephen, as always, thanks for your help.
My pleasure, Andy.
1154, 1260 WRC. It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times.